I grew up in the Mormon Church. Born and raised, as they say. Even during the times of inactivity, I still considered myself to be a true believing Mormon. Times and people change, and when someone pushes you to reevaluate your beliefs, you sometimes realize how wrong you were. 2016 was the year I moved from Mormonville to Heathensburg. I'm Molly Ann Mormon. Welcome to Doubting Dogma, where I explore my new views and new friendships, moving on without religious belief. All right, welcome back, everybody, to Doubting Dogma. This is episode 18. I'm your host, Molly Ann Mormon, and joining me, not in the Heathensburg, is the lovely Riss McCool.
I am so sorry that I ruined your intro. It is not fair. Because now I don't know where I am anymore.
Aw, you can be in the outskirts of the Heathensville.
Okay. Because there were so many towns we journeyed to, and I felt like we were always going on an adventure, and then you stopped saying the city names, and I was sad.
Yeah, because I changed up the little intro ahead of time a little bit.
Oh, but, God. These freaking podcasters changing their intros. Not that I just got a new intro or anything. Not anything like that at all.
Yeah, so how are ya?
Loaded question, to say the least.
Yes, but you did say that there was some stuff you wanted specifically to talk about, so...
Yeah, and I feel it's relevant right now, especially with what's going on, and that is the whole...
whole world falling apart?
You know, shit's on fire, that's obvious, but I mean, there's this constant internal struggle that those of us who make the choice to be visible have. And I don't know if this is universal, but at least recently for me, I've been having some issues with it myself. A lot of self-contradictory thoughts, I guess, would be a good way to put it.
How do you mean?
Okay, well, you know how when, let's call them Nazis because they're Nazis, you know how when the Nazis were marching, there were an awful lot of people saying that any white person who is silent is complicit, right?
Okay.
All right. So there's that idea that when shit's going down, there's platforms we need to use in order to create a vocal resistance. And I get that. But then there's the other side of it. You know, I kind of have what I call the mixed levels of privilege because, yeah, I am a white girl, but I'm also a trans girl. So, I mean, there's that interesting dichotomy where at one area I have a certain level of privilege and another that I clearly don't.
Yeah, and because as soon as you insert trans in front of girl, they automatically take away the privilege of the white and say, well, you're less than any other white person.
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, but it's not even that.
I hate that I understand that.
Well, you've been hanging out with me long enough to see it for yourself.
Well, I mean, I hate that I understand where they're, like, that I can piece together their reasoning. But, I mean, I work with a few bigots.
Yeah.
I hate to say that, but yeah.
Yeah, don't need to be, I don't need to know what they say about me because I know enough of what people say.
They haven't been talking trans stuff recently, but one of them was going a lot into the, oh, I don't see why they're tearing down these statues because that's all erasing our history. Typical bullcrap that's flipping around the interwebs right now.
Yeah. And for the record, these are statues of traitors.
Yeah.
There's no debating that. These are people who rose up and took arms against the government, against the country that these people also claim to be the greatest patriots of. I don't know how those two things mesh. It's almost like it's not about the statues.
Yeah. And there's more on that, but we can talk about that later. So.
Sure. So anyway, you know, I'm a deeply emotional and empathetic person, and there's not really anything I can do to hide that, and not really much I would want to do to hide that. But at the same time, you know, when this stuff was coming out, I was in a hotel room in Lexington, Massachusetts, And I just started going off. And I even joked, like, you know shit's going down if I'm firing off shit on Twitter. But the flip side of that is there's this trend. And I know it's something allies do, and they should, and I appreciate it. This isn't one of those, you know, token ally cookie things. It's the fact that there are memes that are transphobic, and I get that. But there's also these refutation memes where they share the original post and then show somebody tearing it apart. And that's great. And that needs to happen because there needs to be visible resistance to this bullshit. But in my position, I still have to see the original post. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need a reminder that a lot of people in this world think of me as less of a person. I get that enough in my own life. So it's that struggle. It's like, God, you need to share that, but I also don't want to see it. And, you know, because even if it is you saying the awesome thing and the truth and responding to it, I still had to internalize the first part, and it's really difficult.
Yeah. So what do you think that we as allies can do that can still spread the awareness of, well, this crap is wrong and here's why, without the original post? Or should we have it buried in the comments and have a little warning or something saying, okay, well, if you don't want to see the original, don't look here?
Sometimes having the original post in comments is a good way to do it. You know, I'm not the kind of person who needs trigger warnings all that often, but it got to a point a couple days ago where every time I opened the app or the browser that I was seeing something transphobic, and it sucks. It really, really sucks because, you know, almost all the posts that I saw were the good people fighting the good fight. And yet I kept getting really upset at all of the shitty things being said about trans people that I was internalizing. So It's definitely not a black and white issue, and I don't know what the answer is, because, like I said, these things need to be keep being shared, because in this case, silence against the people who spread this misinformation and dehumanize a whole group of people, it needs to be seen. It's just, I don't know how much I can deal with it, and that's not anybody else's problem.
Yeah.
So where I end up, you know, I end up, how do I say this? So it's this internal guilt feeling where I was raised, I think partially unintentionally, to feel like if I'm not working as hard as I can without resting all the time, then I'm doing it wrong. I came from a very blue collar family that was full of like engineers and people who had to work a lot and work all the time. And especially when I was in my young 20s and, you know, my primary reason for working was that I had to pay child support. It was like, well, you have to work that much harder because, you know, you made your choices and blah, 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 blah. And I got in this mindset where I felt like the only way my self-value could be determined was by how hard I worked. Then when I got older, you know, the same people who used to tell me that would be like, you're working too much, you're traveling too much, you need to be at home with, you know, the family and everything. And it's like, but you told me that I needed to do this, and now I do this and you're saying not to. I'm so confused.
Yeah, there are those people that are always critical, like in different areas and aspects. They're always, they offer advice very freely, usually unsolicited, you know, and they always have their opinions on what's going on and what you need to do. And this is what you got to do to improve your life in this aspect, in this aspect, in this aspect. And they're never happy with how you're doing it. It's either too much, too little. Well, okay, you got this. So when's the next step?
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so I feel that internal tug. It's like, every time I feel like I need to take a few days to recharge, or I need to limit my activism, or I need to try to expose myself to less, like any of those things that, you know, everybody is always like, you know, self-care is so important. But anytime I try to take self-care, I end up feeling irrationally guilty. And also, the last thing I want to be accused of right now is white silence, because there are fucking Nazis, and we can't be silent about that. Even though my community is going to be the first ones they come after, like, it's, we can't be silent about it. And I recorded an extra episode myself this week where I kind of went off on these people, and it's like, you know, you think if they came for us, then once they do that, it's over? No, we're just the easiest target, because we're the excuse on both sides for why things are the way they are, you know. And even during the Charlottesville events, one of the things I said was, wake me up when the white atheists start blaming this on me. And like, several people responded, they already are. And I'm like,
oh jeez.
I'm like, of course they are, because they've been blaming Trump on us since he got nominated. Like, a lot of the prominent straight cis white male atheists, they just love to blame shit on us because we, you know, exist. And I find myself struggling a lot, because there, a lot of the people who say these things in other topics, I feel like they have really relevant things to say. And then when they start talking about us, it's like, oh, I guess I can't support you anymore. And then, you know, others will chime in like, well, how do you, you know, how can you write someone off just because of one thing? And that's the hardest part to communicate, because there's a whole lot of people who do not understand it, because the attacks aren't about them. Like, you know, if you're a straight cis person and you're like, well, you know, just because that person has some problematic views on trans people, that doesn't mean, you know, you should write them off. And it's like, yeah, but they're not talking about you. You know, that's another thing we get into in activism, in conversations that we have, that, you know, well, we have to find a place to debate this and discuss this and rationalize it and make people understand. And once again, when it's a, let's say it's a straight cis white guy, it's like, you know, engage them in debate and maybe you can help them learn. And it's like, yeah, but they're not risking anything. They're not putting anything on the line to have that conversation, and they might learn something from it. But I'm in a position where, intentional or not, I'm still once again having to justify and defend my humanity. I am an other, an you know, a form of exoticism that, you know, they need to reach out to understand so that they can go back to their, you know, much higher level of privileged lives and go, yeah, I talked to a trans and I feel better. And we have to engage in that, lest we be accused of, you know, I was just asking questions. And that's where I've been. That's where I've been really struggling recently. It's, I need to be visible because of those who can't, but I'm so fucking exhausted and emotionally turbulent that I don't know what to do.
Wow.
Sorry to get so heavy there.
I always feel like I don't have adequate words, and I mean, I empathize, and you know, I just feel powerless to help. And a lot of this is distance, and a lot of it is, I mean, as far as like the online activism that a lot of people do, I don't do well with confrontation, so I tend to not speak up about a lot of things when I know they'll raise controversy. And I know that's really bad, and that's something I need to work on.
No. I think you've probably heard Callie talk about this on my show, and it's true. You know, people can be activists without having to be on the front lines or without having to be calling people out all the time. Sometimes the strongest act of resistance is to be the one in the room who isn't laughing. And I always carried that with me, because I know there are some people who have their hearts in the right spot, but they either don't have the spoons, or don't have the ability or energy or position where they can risk that to be out there or to be calling people out or, you know, anything like that. And that's valid. And then on the other hand, I'm like, you know, this is where allies need to tag in, because I don't feel like I'm of any use when I'm on a dead battery. You know, some people use spoons. I use the battery metaphor. And when I'm on a dead battery, I become very vulnerable, very cranky, very, I don't even know the right word for it, but I kind of have to hide for a little bit. And of course, it's temporary.
I totally understand that, because I mean, I'm like super introvert myself. And so just being out and being with people in large groups is physically exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
And you always, well, you, me, introverts in general, like always seem to need a recharge time of just, I need to go home. I need to vegetate. I need to read a book. I need to watch a TV show by myself. I need a bubble bath. I need something that is just solitude so that I can pull myself together, because I just put so much of myself out there. And it's really just a recentering of yourself. And you gotta, I mean, if I'm always out, I can't do it.
Right, right. And a lot of people misinterpret me as an extrovert. But you met me as a person before you met me as the person who goes on stage. So you know, like, the person that I am when I'm on stage or when I'm on microphone is me turned up to 11. Like, yes. I'm usually giddy and happy, you know, but when I step on stage or I turn on the mic, like a light switch goes off and I become, you know, Riz fucking Nicole. But just in everyday life, I'm a relatively quiet person. So there's that level of dissonance that some people have where maybe they only know me as the one who's on the microphone or the one that they hear. And then they meet me and they're like, I didn't expect you to be this shy. So
and it's funny, because I don't remember who it was, but somebody, I don't know, it may have been Hillary Clinton, actually, that said something about, like, you have two personas. You've got your home persona and you've got the public one. And she got criticized for it. But it's true. And anybody who thinks it's not true is completely delusional. Because, I mean, everybody has a second persona they wear. Nobody is themselves all the time. Like, I'm a different person at work because I work with a bunch of guys. I have to strap a damn gun to my hip and freaking, you know, pretend like I can kick everybody's ass. So I have a different persona at work than when I'm at home with my husband.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, because like in my job line and in the military and this kind of stuff, you have to pretend like nothing bothers you. You got to be this freaking, you know, you have to pretend to be a badass all the time, especially as a woman in these job fields, because you're already at a disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be that dual aspect. And I mean, I understand what you're saying about being on stage and like you're able to do other things. Cause I mean, like in high school, I was in the drama club and stuff, and it was different being on stage as, you know, this other character than it is like being on stage, just giving a speech and having to look at the audience. Like, even that is so vastly different, because being on stage in a play was so much easier for me because I didn't have to acknowledge the audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just pretend they're not there. Let the lights drown them out. Yeah, it's just... Am I making sense?
You're making absolute sense.
Am I rambling too much?
No.
I don't know.
No. Here would be my thing, I think, at least in this regard. Like, I met you as you. You know, you and your husband asked me to film your wedding. And even though you didn't see who I really was at first, like, we were both on a one-on-one individual conversation basis.
Yes.
And then the second time we hung out, you know, you were getting married and I was working and filming a thing. But then we got to know who we are as people and we became friends. And then you got introduced to my onstage, you know, version. And then I sort of helped you bring out the onstage version of you by having you on the show and then, of course, starting this show with you. So it's interesting to me to have that aspect because at this point in my career, there are so many people who are doing the opposite, that they hear me or see me or whatever, and then they get to know me as a person, and that surprises them. So I'm curious what it's like from your point of view to meet someone as the person before you meet them as the performer, because right now I would say 90% of the people who know me are in the opposite camp.
Well, I don't know. I guess it didn't seem like a big difference to me because, like I had said, I mean, I've been there and I understand, like, you've got a different persona when dealing with people. And the elements of yourself are still there. They're just certain things are amplified.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I was just...
Yeah, like, an example would be the live show, right? So... You know, you talked to me before the live show when everybody was just kind of hanging out and I was just a person there. And most of the time I was just sitting quietly or talking to one person, which is the me of the regular basis. But then the minute my entrance music to start the show hit, like the light switch goes off and, you know, there I am. It's like, hello, I'm Marissa McCool and welcome to Inciting Incident. Like it just clicks like that. And I never noticed until somebody pointed it out, but I find it interesting. And I find it interesting that I just snap into that. And I've been doing it so long that I don't even think about it. It's not even a plan I have to make. But of course, then being that outward person so often and being so visible and so vocal, a lot of people who aren't in that and maybe just listen, which of course, if there weren't listeners, we wouldn't have a show. So there's never any disregard for that. But, you know, sometimes when you hear people like that, I feel the need to relay to them that none of it comes without consequence. There is absolutely nothing that we do when we put ourselves on the line, when we expose our vulnerability, even if it's in a character. There is absolutely nothing we do that doesn't take its emotional toll, that doesn't cost energy and emotion and vulnerability, and that shit adds up. And sometimes we just need to tag out for a little while. And I've had to do that several times recently just because I get to the point where it's like, I can't see any more shit about my community right now. Because when it's happening publicly and it's happening personally, I can't do it. And I'll elaborate on that point of the personal just because I feel like when I relate these personal interactions, it gives people greater empathy for who I am and what I do. So in the midst of all of this going on, I had extremely harmful things happen on a personal level 3 days in a row. And that just kind of drained me completely. Someone I went to high school with decided to send me a message calling me a thing they couldn't identify.
I saw that one.
Yeah. And, you know, that was a person, I won't say I was ever close to them, but they definitely had interest in me at some point and, like, had propositioned me before. And it was just like, why? You know, why was that necessary? And then the next day, the very last person that I ever wrestled a match with in professional wrestling decided to message me saying something along the lines of, you know, someone at an indie show showed me your picture and I couldn't believe what I saw. And now I'm just spending time with the book you gave me and thinking of better times. And it's like, whoa, what?
What?
Yeah. Like, well, and then, you know, I remember back before this when we were friends and everything. And it's like, so me being who I am is the breaking point. And what you're remembering as the good old days are the days
when you had to live confused and a lie and not knowing the true essence of yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I constantly say, like, anybody who knew me before I came out, what you knew was a facade. You saw a projection, a cover, an illusion. It was an illusion. I was never that person that you thought you knew. The person I am now is the person I've always been, just most people didn't know it. And for some reason, that's a breaking point for people. For some reason, even if you don't get it or quote unquote agree with it, like there are people I know who are so conservative, so far to the right, so religious that they, you know, quote unquote, don't agree with it. But we're friends and or their family and they love me. And that comes above your opinion because it's a person.
You don't have to freaking agree with it, but you know what? It's not your life and you need to butt the hell out. Not you, but them. You know what I mean? I mean, all these people trying to impose their bigoted beliefs on everyone else because they can't stand the thought of it and it makes them feel weird. Oh.
Mm-hmm. I have a friend who, like, it got to the point where we just couldn't discuss politics for a very long time. And this person's like I said, you know, super right, super red, super Catholic. And we actually had a point where we didn't talk for a year because of her opinions on trans people. But she went to me to my with me to my friend's wake when I was home in Pennsylvania and didn't say a bad word. And before that, we had had the conversation of, you know where I stand on this. You know how I feel about it. But I love you more than I'm worried about that. And it's like, if more people could do that, if more people could reach that level of, yeah, I may not understand it or agree with it, but there's a person there. And if that person you love matters to you, then them being who they are, even if you don't understand it, should be the priority, right?
You'd think.
So yeah, I've been dealing with that, and what I did was I kind of followed in the Eli Bosnick footsteps and deleted the Facebook and Twitter apps from my phone. And even though I'll use the browser to log in sometimes, you know, that's been really good because there's not that constant need to remove the notification. So I think doing that for a few days has been immensely helpful, and I'm back on the uptick. But I just want to encourage anybody who feels guilty for taking times that they need, like, don't.
Yeah,
I even
definitely.
Wrote it in one of my blogs, you know, I'm no good to anyone with a dead battery.
Yeah, some people's alternator just works a little different and mm-hmm. needs to have some space to charge back up, definitely.
So what's it been like for you? Because you came at it for very different reasons and in a very different way. And by that, I mean, you know, you came on the show with me, but I don't think at that point you were planning on starting your own thing.
Oh, definitely not.
I was what flipped
so
it for
terrified
you?
That morning.
What flipped it for you, and how have you felt about it since you decided to?
Decided to have my own podcast?
Decided to open that part of yourself up and be public.
Well, I still don't know that I feel like I'm completely public since, I mean, I am Molly and not, you know, my given name, but...
Well, using a pseudonym, that puts yourself out there, so don't...
Yeah, I just felt like I needed to vent my personal grievances, my experience going through all this, and expose some of the things about the church that most people don't know. You know, most people don't have that insider perspective of certain things that happen and like the things that are expected of you inside the Mormon church. And, you know, I've just recently, since some people have found the show due to me having Andrew and Bryce and Noah on, I've gotten a few emails saying, hey, I'm an ex-Mo too. Thanks for speaking out. You know, it's important that you're out there talking and you know, telling people about this, and I actually got one note that was, thank you for talking about your anxiety and depression and for working to normalize it and, you know, get rid of the stigma about it. And I mean, I'm still, every time I get a note, I'm just so tickled because I'm like, I can't believe that anything I say has any merit. And I mean, sorry, I'm getting all emotional now.
It's okay. We both did.
And I mean, it means a lot to me that I'm able to touch complete strangers, that, you know, they have their own experiences and they haven't voiced it, and then they hear it from me. And so, I mean, there's that connection, even though we've never met and stuff. And it's just, I don't know, I'd still have trouble, like, even the thought of trying to do a show by myself if you can't make it and I don't have a guest, like, absolutely terrifies me because I don't think I can ramble that long by myself. Even though maybe I could, but I don't know. I just, yeah, I don't word good sometimes, but.
And that's valid. And that's okay. I have seen you blossom. Like, the first time I had you on, I've told you this, I saw that the walls go up at certain questions, and I saw the internal debate you were having, even though I didn't know what it was at the time. And I admire the hell out of you, because it takes a lot to get out of what you did and then go, I need to delve back into that part of my life in order to help other people. And I find that not only admirable, but brave as shit. Because I've learned so much about that from you, because I didn't grow up with it. You know, I've talked about that when we've had those Mo conversations. So, but I can also relate, because not a day goes by where I don't get a message from a trans person who, you know, felt like they were alone or didn't have a voice, or a parent of a trans person who maybe understands their child's gender identity a little better, or even, this has happened too, someone who doesn't have any of those things but expresses that they used to feel a certain way about trans people, but I put a human face on it and they've changed. I had someone at ReasonCon say that to me, and they had messaged me on Twitter beforehand asking if they could give me a hug for it, and it's like, of course. So I try to keep that in mind whenever I'm feeling low, or, like, you know, when I see Nazis marching, I feel like my work hasn't meant anything. I try to remember that, and you should too, because you are doing a great thing. And, you know, we're approaching this thing from two different angles, but we're both in the same, you know, trying to find ourselves and trying to help others along the way business. And that's why I really feel like this combination of you and me, even though I haven't been able to make it to all the interviews lately, like, that's why I think it's so powerful, because we grew up radically different, and we are radically different, but we ended up connecting almost completely randomly, and sometimes that's how the best friendships are made.
Yeah, and I am so, so grateful to whichever little photographer person sent me the link to your your business page. So, I mean, that in itself, like, has completely changed so much of my life over the past year. It's just amazing to me.
Well, I'd be interested in hearing you elaborate on that, like, because I've seen it from my perspective, but how has it changed for you overall?
Oh, because, I mean, I mentioned this a little bit with my interview with Noah, but, like, the election last year, I wasn't planning on voting at all, because I couldn't stand either one of them, because I have spent so long as such a hardcore Republican, and, you know, anybody with a D behind their name, ain't going to vote for them, because blah, 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 you know, and I've spent so long hating Hillary, and, you know, I'm still not, like, super fond of her, but hell of a lot better than that freaking monstrosity in the White House now.
Yeah.
Of course, I think even the macaques at the at the zoo that I volunteered at would be better than him. You know, they just run around and do their little monkey stuff, but... Oh, I mean, it's... Oh, let me find words in my brain. My views have completely changed over the past year. And, I mean, I grew up thinking abortion was a horrible thing. And now I'm sitting here and I'm looking at, you know, all these abortion regulations and they're shutting down clinics everywhere. And, you know, there are some states that only have one Planned Parenthood that can provide certain services. And I am just horrified. And I still don't know that I myself would ever get one. But, I mean, it's not for me to say if someone else should. If for someone else, if that's not, you know, the best decision for their personal situation. It's not for me to say. And if we outlaw certain things like that, then when it is medically necessary in order to save the life of the mother, nobody is going to have any experience in order to perform the procedure safely. And, I mean, some people may see that as just like a cheap excuse and like, whatever. But, I mean, certain things like that, and, I mean, even my trans views and gay views and everything, because I had never really thought about it, didn't much care before. And now, I mean, now I'm like, well, heck yeah, I'll let him do it. You know, before I was like, yeah, whatever. But now it's become a matter of, no, they're just people like everybody else. Leave them alone. Let them use the damn bathroom. Everybody's got to poop. You know, I mean, yeah. I mean, so many little things like that just through, you know, frickin' Tom and Cecil and Noah and them and their vulgar, irreverent way of expressing things have completely changed the way I see it.
And I'll tell you, one of the things I admire about Noah especially is how he's expressed to me that he recognizes his position as, you know, a cis straight male and has used that to help people like me. And Eli has done the same thing. And, you know, all of those guys on some level. And whenever somebody, you know, gets mad that sometimes they get called out on shitty, quote unquote, ally behavior, those are the people I point to and say, yeah, look at them. They're doing it right. Because when they stand up for us, it's not about them. You know, they're doing it because it's the right thing to do. And if you're only acting a certain way because you need a pat on the back or because you want to get treated special, you're doing it wrong. And the best advice I can give to anyone who's trying to do that better is if someone tells you that something you're saying is problematic, listen before you defend yourself. Even I had to do that lately, like where I had I still think it's silly, but there was an episode title that I had where it referred to the song Africa by Toto.
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't see what the original song or original episode title had been. I just saw the fallout afterwards.
The original title was I Heck the Cis Down in Africa. And it was a joke because the guest we had...
you had Eric on.
Yeah, we had Eric on.
Talking about Zambia.
Yeah, and, you know, the cis are getting out of hand is a completely sarcastic show. That's kind of the point. And then someone called it out on being racist, and I was like, but we're just referring to a song. But my attitude whenever someone says something like that is, if I'm being problematic, correct me, please. Because I feel like other people should do that when it comes to me talking about trans stuff, then when it's something I don't know as much about or where I'm not on the side of the marginalized group, then I need to listen. And I still don't agree with it.
I still don't understand how that a spoof title off an old song is racist?
I don't feel like it is. But
I don't see it. I really don't.
I also don't feel like it was up to me to make that decision. And when someone explained it to me, they said that was a group of white people making money off of Africa while millions of people were dying of AIDS in Africa. And it's problematic. And the lyrics are problematic. And I'm like, I still think it's a stupid song. But you know what? It's not up to me. Just like when, you know, cis people are arguing about trans people and completely disregarding us. Like, it's, I was like, okay, this time it's me. It's not about me. And it's not a fight that I feel is worth fighting or one that I should. So it was like, okay, I'm just going to change the episode title because I feel like that's a much better thing to do than to try to argue about it. And that's a hard position to reach, but sometimes you got to kind of decide if a battle's worth fighting or not, or whether you just go, okay, I'm sorry, I won't say that. And we all have to do that on some level.
Yeah.
So now that we're all good and depressed, I think we pretty much covered what I wanted to talk about. So, you know, I don't really feel like there's a concluding thing I can say other than it's important that you take the time you need to recharge, you know, as much as you can, because there's this stigma against that, and there's this stigma against mental health in this country, and there's this stigma against rest, because apparently all we should ever do is work, no matter what it is, and, you know, appreciate that you have work and all that. And there's a lot that we could involve in that. But yeah, I feel like we
know what? The hell with those people. If they don't understand that some people who aren't extroverts, that don't want to be around a whole bunch of damn people all the time, if they don't understand that you need to freaking sit back and recharge, the hell with them.
Yes.
And the hell with people trying to say that freaking depression and anxiety is just like made up nonsense and you're just attention seeking and this kind of crap, because the hell with you.
Yeah.
Because I shouldn't have to be ashamed or feel guilty because of my depression. And I also shouldn't have to go through it. And, you know, it's not a fun thing, you know, spending my hour drive to work crying the whole way because I'm feeling down. And, well, more than just feeling down, you know. I mean, it's not just a temporary thing. I mean, I've had some of this going on for months, and I've had it before when I was in the Army and never sought help for it because of the stigma. So
let's end on a positive note. Fuck every Confederate statue that all of these people are defending. I don't care if it is part of our history. Well, it's not part of our history. It's part of a certain part of this country's history. And even that, it's celebrating traitors. And
read a freaking history book. That's how you learn. You don't learn the history of it by looking at the statues.
Right.
And if there are certain statues that I think, even Confederate statues that should stay. Now, hear me out. I think there's like a couple of them at Gettysburg amongst all the others, and I think those ones should stay because, I mean, it's talking about the different battles throughout the whole freaking battlefield.
Right.
And so, like, there are certain statues saying, well, this is what happened here and that kind of stuff. So those ones, I think, can stay. The ones in the middle of freaking podunk freaking Georgia and Mississippi in the middle of the town square, yeah, by all means, freaking explode that crap. But, well, not explode. I do not condone any sort of violence or C4.
Yes, so
do not take violent advice from a podcast.
Oh, I needed that after that. So let's end it there, because this needed a good note.
Oh, well, here, one little good note, just little update, because those that have followed my blog have known, I don't know if I wrote about it yet, but I started volunteering and this is all part of my therapy. I started volunteering at the Catoctin Wildlife Preserve and Zoo. And so I have gone down there twice now, and I go and I help out at the petting areas while the feeding stations, because I guess there's a new USDA regulation that they have to have somebody there to ensure that people are only feeding authorized food to the animals. Because I guess somewhere very recently, this summer in fact, someone had brought in unauthorized food to a different type of area similar, and animals got either sick or died because of this unauthorized food that they were fed.
Mm-hmm.
So now the USDA says, okay, at these feeding areas, you have to have somebody there to ensure they're only feeding the proper things that they bought. So I got to hang out with the fallow deer for a while. And those that don't know, these are Eurasian fallow deer, and they always keep their spots. So even the adults have the spots kind of like the white-tailed deer's little fawns. And so, I mean, they're super cute. And then I also spent some time down at the main petting zoo area where they have some alpacas, and they've got some of the Jacob's four-horned sheep. I like to call them demon goats because they look pretty cool. But it's just been so much fun being able to go and sit with the cute little critters, even though, like, being stationary there does get my anxiety a little bit because I feel like I'm sort of, like, trapped to the one spot. But that's something that I'm trying to work through. But it was just fun being able to work with the animals, well, sort of, and, like, actually help little tiny kids, like little two-year-olds that are there, like, clenching the food in their fists rather than holding it on a flat hand. And there was one of them, I was there, no, no, hold it like this, sweetie. And his mom's like, he listens to everyone but me. So, I mean, it was a lot of fun. And if you're in the area of Thurmont, Maryland, yeah, come see me. But, but it was a lot of fun. And that's a place I really, really love because, you know, they rescue animals from either failing zoos or people who had exotic pets either illegally or just could not care for them anymore. So mm-hmm. they've adopted them and they care for them there and everything. And it's just been really great. And it's been a good thing for my mental health going on. So
good. Positive mental health things.
Yes. With critters. It was fun. So, all right. Now, with that being said, I guess that's it for this week, and we'll see everybody next week.
Sure will. Thanks for joining me.
I want to thank you for joining us. If you like what you hear, please consider supporting the show on Patreon at patreon.com/doubtingdogma or leave a review on iTunes. You can follow the show on Facebook at facebook.com/doubtingdogma or on Twitter at doubtingdogma. The intro music was written and performed by Marissa Alexa McCool and was used with her permission.